In 1969, Warren Burger was appointed Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. He was named to this position by President Richard Nixon. After Burger was confirmed, he was offered a tour of the Supreme Court building in Washington, a building for which, as Chief Justice, he would be responsible. On his tour, he noticed several things. He noticed that the place was in desperate need of painting. He noticed that the lighting was dismal and needed to be replaced. He noticed that his new office as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, was smaller than his office back in the Court of Appeals. And then there was the courtroom itself. Burger objected that the chairs used by the justices didn't match. Each justice brought their own chair to the court. So some chairs were tall, some were short, some sat higher than others. It was a complete mismatch. Burger ordered that the court purchase matching chairs. But the other thing that he noticed about the courtroom, and this is huge, the other thing had to do with the bench itself, that wooden dais where the justices sat. That wooden bench was straight. The justices sat shoulder to shoulder in a line, looking out at the courtroom, kind of like the disciples in Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper painting. From arguing a case himself before the court, Burger knew that sitting in this arrangement, shoulder to shoulder, straight around across, the justices were unable to see one another. They were unable to make eye contact, and they had difficulty hearing one another when they spoke. And this configuration led to a high number of interruptions during oral arguments. So, in 1971, while the court was in recess, Burger ordered that the bench itself be disassembled and rebuilt into a new configuration. He wanted there to be a middle section that faced straight out where three justices would sit, and then he wanted two side sections that angled forward slightly into a flat U shape. Technically, this shape is called a half hexagon. And the intent of this change was that the justices could now see and hear one another. Now, this change was not welcomed by every member of the court. Justice William O. Douglas called the change, quote, as useless and unnecessary as a man's sixth Cadillac. Apparently, he had Cadillacs. Understandably, Justice Douglas objected to this new design because it altered how things had been in the past, an arrangement that he had gotten used to. This new design challenged his comfort zone. Now, Chief Justice Burger's change was sound, not just from his own personal experience arguing before the court, but also because it reflected the psychological understanding of how people communicate. In communicating, there are important audio and visual connections that people make between each other. Research has shown that eye contact can factor greater cooperation among individuals. And the Supreme Court, Burger knew, worked best when it worked together. The justices, he felt, needed to see one another. They needed to be able to hear one another. Research also shows that when people cannot hear, decision-making and collegiality can suffer. Our reading today from the Gospel of Mark is one of the travel stories that we encounter so frequently in our Gospels. Jesus and his disciples are traveling between places. They are headed towards the edge of the Jewish lands, to the villages surrounding Caesarea Philippi. And he uses this opportunity of travel time to teach the disciples. In this instance, Jesus asked his disciples a very simple question. He asked, "Who do people say that I am?" And the disciples, walking along beside him, offer a range of responses. They say, "Some think that you are John the Baptist. Some believe that you are Elijah, returned from heaven. Some consider you to be a prophet." These answers, they're not very surprising. They reflect the people's attempt to place this miracle-performing rabbi into their existing religious framework, to view Jesus as a prophet. It keeps him well within their own comfort zone of faith. They are, for example, they're very used to the idea of a prophet. And Jesus, he certainly could be a prophet. But then Jesus asked his disciples another question. He asked them who they consider him to be. And Peter jumps up and he proclaims, "You are the Messiah." And we applaud Peter for seeing beyond the mundane responses of the general population, but still, Messiah is not that much of a stretch. To view Jesus as Messiah, that's still well within Peter's own comfort zone. At that time, the people of Israel were actively hoping for a Messiah. They expected a Messiah to come, but they wanted it to be within the confines of Jewish tradition. They wanted a Messiah who would be an anointed king, one from the house of David, one who would free Israel from their Roman oppressors. They wanted a king who would restore Israel to glory and make her people righteous. That's the Messiah they had in mind, a Messiah that was well within their comfort zone. The origins of this term comfort zone are not known. The leading theory is that it describes a temperature range, which would be about 67 degrees to 78 degrees, depending on the season of the year, at which people were neither too hot nor too cold. A temperate range. But normally, when we speak of comfort zone, we're not talking about the temperature, we're talking about a psychological comfort zone where we are able to function without stress. I like how one author puts it. She writes, "A comfort zone is a behavioral state within which a person operates in an anxiety-neutral position." Anxiety-neutral position. A comfort zone, that's a good place, isn't it? In the second part of our reading from the Gospel of Mark, Jesus then informs his disciples that he is going to suffer. He's already asked who do they feel that he is, and now he tells them that as Messiah, he is going to suffer. He's going to be rejected by the religious authorities. He will be killed, but then after 3 days, he will rise again. And Jesus says this to them quite clearly. There's no hidden subtext to his words. There's nothing to decipher here. But Peter finds that this prognostication challenges his own comfort zone. Yes, Peter is happy to call Jesus Messiah, but Peter's Messiah is supposed to defeat the Romans. He's not supposed to be killed by his own people. And so Peter pulls Jesus aside and demands that he not speak like this in front of the other guys because, you know, that's bad for morale. Who wants to join up with a martyr? We're here for the glory, not the suffering. And upon hearing this, Peter whips around and he says to Jesus whips around and he says to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." And Jesus is correct. Peter's comfort zone does not allow for Jesus to suffer, much less die. Peter expects Jesus to lead them into Jerusalem with the army of Israel poised behind them, ready to slay the Romans, just as David defeated Goliath 1,000 years earlier, the scrappy underdog taking on the empire. The concept of a comfort zone is popular among writers of books about business and business leadership. And the authors of these books stress that if their readers wish to succeed, then they need to move beyond their personal comfort zones. Comfort zones are great, but they can lead to us living in a rut, to be doing the same thing over and over because it doesn't cause us any stress or discomfort. A comfort zone can become the path of least resistance. However, if we want to improve or change or expand, then we will likely need to step beyond the bounds of our comfort zone. In 1908, two psychologists conducted what has become a famous experiment. Using mice, they found that stimulation improved the animal's performance, but only up to a certain level. There is a point which the scientists defined as optimal anxiety. And beyond that point of optimal anxiety, the mice were under too much stress and their performance deteriorated. It seems that, yes, we can be pushed, but we can be pushed too far. As this pertains to humans, another writer explains, we humans need a place of productive discomfort. If you're too comfortable, you're not productive. And if you're too uncomfortable, you're not productive. Like Goldilocks, we can't be too hot or too cold. And then, in the final section of our reading from the Gospel of Mark, Jesus challenges his listeners to move beyond their own comfort zones. He says to the crowd that's assembled to hear him, "If you want to become my followers, then you need to deny yourself and take up your cross and go where I go." These words are radical. These words exist beyond any reasonable person's comfort zone, because Jesus talked about a cross, and to take up a cross referenced that vile form of degrading and torturous execution that was employed by the Romans at the time. No one should want anything to do with that. No one should want to take up their cross. But Jesus tells the people that to save their life, they must lose their life. And if they lose their life for the sake of Jesus and the sake of the gospel, then they will indeed save their life. Now, I don't believe that Jesus is necessarily telling the people here to go out and become martyrs. But he is telling them that to leave the boundaries of their comfort zone is required if they wish to follow him. And to do so, they must be willing to accept the consequences of following him, of being a Christ follower. They must place the priorities of the gospel ahead of their own comfort and security. If being a Christ follower means, for example, giving away your money, so be it. If being a Christ follower means giving up of your time or your energy or your resources or your gifts so that others might experience God's love, a love which is made known to us through Jesus Christ, then to lose our lives for Christ is to save it. There's one more aspect of comfort zones that I find useful, and that is the knowledge that comfort zones can change in size. They can become smaller, but they can also become larger. Comfort zones grow as we assimilate new experiences into our lives. It's kind of like adding an addition onto your house. It's new, but you get used to it. You remember how Justice Berger changed the shape of the Supreme Court bench? Two researchers conducted a study of 20 years of oral arguments in the Supreme Court to find out if this change made any difference. They looked at oral arguments for 10 years before the bench change and then for 10 years following. And using court transcripts and audio recordings, they painstakingly tabulated every utterance by every justice, and they calculated the number of interruptions during these oral arguments. And what they found was that after 1971, when the new bench was instituted, interruptions between justices fell by more than half. Berger's experiment was a success. And today, 50 years later, I doubt that any justice would want to return to the Last Supper style of seating that they used to have. Their comfort zone has been expanded. As Christ followers, we should also strive to expand our own comfort zones. And the gospel message provides us with the charge to reach beyond ourselves always. Take, for example, our congregation's involvement with Compassionate Hands. In the beginning, several years ago, we were anxious about housing the homeless. But we did it. And today, we've done more than we ever imagined. We've opened our facilities, and we regularly feed folk over at Compassionate Hands. Actions beyond our initial comfort zone, but now, which seem very normal. We have grown. As Christ followers, we cannot remain complacent in our lives. As Christ followers, we are called to expand our own world so that more may know God's love in Jesus Christ. Amen.